I am just trolling. From Yahoo Sports, this is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Hey, get out of here, huh?
That's what you're calling.
Sean is right.
The FC Yahoo Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the FC Yahoo Podcast. I am your host, Shahan Ahmed, as usual with Joey Galino here in Playa Vista.
Glad to be here. We got the big room today.
We do have the big room. And actually phoning in, we have a very special guest. This man has been so busy that he has not yet seen the email from Yahoo telling him not to be on the podcast. Eric Adelson, thank you for joining us.
Good to be on. Thanks, guys.
So Eric's on, and he recently wrote a column about the U.S. soccer presidential race that I believe the election is on February the 10th. And there are eight candidates who have qualified for this final stage, we'll call it. And so they've been campaigning hard, as you would expect. And we really wanted Eric to come on and speak to what he's learned from these candidates, because he's been, frankly, listening to them in person. So first of all, Eric, I guess just your general broad thoughts on what you've seen from this election. Is it a complete, you know, crapshoot? Are we looking at some really, really well put together candidates? And, you know, we'll go candidate by candidate and spend time on the ones that actually matter versus the ones that may just kind of be somehow have qualified. But just start off by letting us know where the process is, what your takeaways are thus far.
Okay, well, I think that just from a big picture perspective, there's two sectors of this race. There's the populist group, which is former players for the most part, Hope Solo, Kyle Martino, Eric Guinalda. Those are the leaders on that side. Michael Winograd is also former, but he's a lawyer, and so it's a little bit different. And they want to kind of burn it down. I mean, to various degrees, and we'll get into which and how much. But basically, they are, even though they played the sport, they are the outsiders. And then there are the insiders. They're the business people. They're the administration. They're the establishment. Kathy Carter and Carlos Cordero. And so, to me, the big question about this election is U.S. soccer going to stay with the establishment, or are we going to have sort of a populist revolt where you've got a former player who doesn't have a lot of business experience taking over and really changing it? And so from, if you want to know just one thing about this, you want to know whether they're going to really topple this or whether they're just going to change it slightly and call it a shift, which it isn't.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're right. The it seems like of the candidates that really legitimately have a chance to win, it's kind of breaking down into two segments. And I personally, I could be good to have a former player come in and kind of turn things around or try to turn things around, because I feel like they can surround themselves with people who can answer their questions. Whereas, you know, the status quo, the establishment, whatever, has kind of had that chance over the years. They've had a chance to do a lot of different things and prove themselves in a lot of different ways. And this is kind of where we've ended up. Now, I know that, you know, Sunil Gulati was the one in charge for all that. But do you get a sense that voters or that fans, whoever, are breaking down on one side or the other? Or is it pretty mixed right now?
I've spoken to the coaches. I mean, this is the coaches' convention, and I spoke to quite a few of them, and they are not fans of the establishment. I mean, they are not happy. They're frustrated. They feel like Sunil Gulati didn't listen to them. They are very frustrated, in some cases angry. And I did not hear one good thing about Sunil or about Cordero or about Carter. I really felt like there is a groundswell for change. But the question is, will the voters actually go there? As it gets closer, they're going to be hearing from, there's going to be a lot of pressure, I think, on them to go conservative, because right now the people in power are, even though Gulati's on his way out, he's still very much in power. He was there, and there will be, I think, pressure on the voters to sort of stay within. I think that there's a pretty good chance that you're going to have the winner of this be someone from the establishment. They're going to call it a change, a departure. But I will very much tell you, from talking to candidates and talking to regular soccer people in the community, that there is a strong appetite for change. This is not a joke. This is not a drill. When they hear Hope Solo tearing into the federation and Kyle Martino basically casting himself as an outsider, and Eric Winalda standing up there saying, it's time for truth. It's time for us to talk about the truth. That resonates. That is not considered something that's anathema. That's not considered something that's way out of bounds or radical. That is very much speaking to the audience. And so I am really interested to see what happens. I think it's in the hearts of the people who matter to really go different on this election.
Yeah, and I was going to say, just to build off that real quick, I think one of the best quotes that you got was when Hope Solo told the crowd at the convention, at the or the forum, excuse me, people in Chicago should not tell you how to run soccer in your state. So now when you say that you're not sure, you know, you know that there's kind of like this groundswell of support for change, but you're not sure that's going to manifest itself in the votes ultimately, do you think there might be an element of fear that if they don't go with the status quo, then, or if, let's say that the coaches, certain ones of them, the voters go against the status quo, but the status quo still wins. Is there like a sense that they might be like, you know, oh crap, they're going to pay even less attention now to like the local communities or whatever than they did before? Like, why do you think that it might play out like that?
I just think that it's sort of prisoner's dilemma, where if I don't vote for this person who's already kind of entrenched, then if that person wins, then I don't have a great relationship with them. I voted against them, and they might know that.
Right.
And then they might support somebody else, or they might not take my call. I think there's somewhat of a distrust of the power, and that distrust may ironically lead to more votes for them because you don't want to actually spurn them and then pay for it later. And I also think that Cordero and Carter are going to stand up there, and they did on the weekend, and say, you know, it's time for change. It's time for something different, and sort of cast themselves as more different than they really are. And so I think that if the voters sort of talk to each other, which I'm sure they will to some extent, they might be more emboldened to go different. And I think also the other hesitancy is. You know, does someone like Eric Winalda have the chops to do this? I mean, this really is a business. This is an organization. This is somewhat corporate. You have to go and meet big wigs. I mean, they obviously have the bid. That's the FIFA World Cup bid. You have to deal with these foreign dignitaries. It's something that requires, in some people's view, it requires more than just a soccer background. And I think that that's something that people will have in mind going forward in their vote. But again, I think that if you took these coaches out to the bar and said, okay, who do you really want to do this? Who would you like to see win this? I'm pretty sure that almost all of them, or at least the majority, would want a former player to do it.
So I have a question that just may be it's basics. First of all, who exactly is voting, and how many votes are there, or how many voters actually exist?
I don't know exactly how many voters exist, but I know that it's sort of a range between coaches and executives, soccer dignitaries. It's sort of a range, and it's sort of the electoral college, I would say, of the soccer world. And I think that's another advantage for somebody like, Cordero or Carter, where you have to win the electoral college and not necessarily the popular vote.
Mm-hmm. Really,
and a lot of
well
the people who are voting are people that understand how the process works, and they might be a little more sympathetic rather than somebody like, you know, a coach at a club level who doesn't actually, I mean, some of the club coaches said, I'm not even sure how this works. I'm not even sure what it would take to win this.
Right.
They don't have time. They don't have time to learn this. They don't have time to really follow the details of these politics. And so some of the more advanced people are sort of by definition more conservative.
Yeah. And to kind of build off that, this is kind of a tricky question I want to ask you about Hope Solo specifically, but then kind of draw it out a little bit to Kyle Martino and Eric Winalda. Hope Solo is obviously a much different person from Donald Trump. I'm not saying that she has his incredibly blatant fallacies. Let's just put it that way. There are certainly troubles that she's had before, but, you know, I'm not comparing her necessarily morally as a person like that to Trump. What I am saying is she represents kind of like a change candidate. She represents someone who's anti-establishment, and she kind of speaks her mind on a lot of different things. Again,
an outsider.
She's an outsider, yes. Again, she doesn't speak her mind to the level of Trump. Again, you guys can connect the dots to what I'm saying there. But what she does do is she's very forthright, and she's very blunt about a lot of things. And so when she's running, you know, the voters, the coaches can say all they want, oh, that's the kind of change that we want. But do you think the fact that she's so volatile, first of all, do you think that that Trump analogy is actually, you know, legitimate? And do you also think that maybe the fact that she's so volatile means that they might swing the voters a little more towards someone like Kyle Martino, who's promising some of the same things, but is, you know, kind of comports himself a little bit better, if that makes sense?
Yeah, well, I do know one major difference is Hope Solo can sing the words of the national anthem. So that's one difference between her and Trump.
Yes, that's
but
true.
But I think that there is, regardless of what you think about Trump or Hope Solo, I think that there is a legitimate and important parallel to draw between them in the sense that the people in that audience, a lot like the people that you talk to on the street about the direction of our country, feel like there is an elite group that isn't paying attention. Mm-hmm. That the establishment just takes care of itself, and the real people out there are being ignored. That was a theme in this convention. That is absolutely a theme in our country. And even if you think that Trump is completely illegitimate, that is a feeling that is very legitimate. And that is something that Hope Solo is appealing to. She has done the homework. She has talked to a lot of people across the country, and they feel ignored. And they told me after this forum that they felt like nobody's communicating with them, that nobody's paying attention. And that is a very similar theme that we have in the country today. And Trump has tapped into it, and I think Hope Solo has too. I think that she gets it, and I think it's true. I think it's real. And just sitting in the audience watching, it wasn't a debate. It should have been a debate. But even that is a good example. It was supposed to be a debate. It turned out to be these prearranged questions one at a time. And that just sort of goes to the problem, is that you can't really have a real raw discussion. Mm-hmm. The idea, you know, nobody said this to me, but sitting just my own reaction is, how are we going to give the former players a real chance when they can't be up there side to side with the executives,
right,
with the people who are in the establishment? And that's the kind of decision that's sort of made behind the scenes that doesn't reflect the real needs of the people. And that's something that's going on in our country. And this election really has something to do with it. And a lot of the questions about Solo are questions I heard about Trump, which is, he's saying a lot of things I agree with. I'm not sure if she can do the job. And that's almost literally what I heard, is that when I asked a couple of the coaches after the forum was over, who was the one that spoke to you most directly, they said Hope Solo. But they are unlikely to actually throw the support behind her because they're worried that, you know, first of all, she certainly has a controversial past. Second of all, she is volatile in the sense that she doesn't mince words. She is absolutely a truth teller, and she is not going to soften her opinion. I mean, she already called out Sepp Blatter for groping her,
yep,
which, good for her, she should do that. But at the same time, I think some people say, well, what is she going to say next? And that's appealing when she's speaking the truth that everybody wants to hear. But there is a worry that if she's going to be in a boardroom, she's going to rub some people the wrong way. And then there's the experience factor, which I think Winalda has, Martino has, Caligiuri has, all the former players. You wonder, do you have the necessary experience to be kind of a CEO?
Hope Solo's last match, I believe, what she called all the Swedish
Sweden
players, cowards.
Yeah, bunch of cowards.
Yeah, so she has history, you know, ignoring the legal stuff that's come up recently. Just, she has history in terms of not really biting her tongue. And this seems like a position where it is a lot of politicking. But kind of going back to what you were talking about a little bit earlier, Eric, you know, you said that a lot of the coaches said they don't feel like they've been heard, they've been ignored by the Federation thus far, and by Gulati in the past. What exactly are the issues that they feel they've been ignored on, and what type of changes are being promised in this election?
Okay, that's a great question. Here is something that the theme that came back many times over is, how do we get more diversity in the sport? It's a rich family's elite sport. I think anybody, I'm a parent, I don't have kids who play soccer, but I've been in the soccer world. I know soccer with moms and dads, and it's almost prohibitively expensive to play and to travel. And I think that that is something that is It's a turnoff to a lot of families of that are working class. And there's the fear. And Hope Solo, again, said this the best, that that she said the next little girl from Richland, Washington has already been passed up because she's not in the system. I think that's a great point that she made. And when she said that, people in the audience started nodding. And then when I spoke to people afterwards, these are club coaches. They are trying to get minority players involved, minority families involved, poorer families involved, working class families involved, families that don't have time to say, okay, I'm going to take a week off of work and I'm going to travel out of state for this tournament. They just don't have time for that. They barely have time to get their kids to the practice. In fact, one of the club coaches said, we would like to raise money so that we can hire a van to get kids to practice. And, you know, obviously there's money issues with that. There's liability issues with that. You want like an Uber van to take kids to practice. But it goes to the point that they are really struggling to grow the sport on the from the day-to-day basis. And they feel like the people at the top have no idea what their struggles are and how hard it is to appeal to families and to keep them involved over the course of season after season, not just money, but in terms of logistics. And they want help with that. And I think that some of the candidates have ideas, and some of them just say they have ideas and don't. And I think that even within the populist sector of this group, you have some, I think like Kyle Martino, I think like Solo, I think Caligiuri, you got the sense that they have really studied this and they kind of get this. Caligiuri, I talked to him after the forum, and he said that he started a small soccer league in Watts, in the part of LA that was overcome by riots,
right?
In the 90s, this is something where he learned a ton about the inner city, about African Americans and why they may or may not love soccer. He didn't say that on stage. He should have. I think that was a mistake on his part. But again, you get the sense that he really knows his stuff. Whereas someone like Ronaldo, he stood up there and he was saying the things about we need to change the system and we need to talk about truths. But it wasn't clear that he really had done the homework the way Martino had or Caligiuri or even Hope Solo. And so even there's even sort of a fracture within the populist community about how to change the game. But it's really important to do it because I think that the next Christian Pulisic is going to be actually easier to find than the next Clint Dempsey. And it's the next Clint Dempsey, I think, that's going to win them a bid to the World Cup and maybe win them some games.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the diversity issue because I'd wanted to ask about that. And I also want to ask about this because drawing kind of a line from that, they're not quite the same thing, but they're sort of on the same plane of issue in this election, is the equality thing. And let's lay out facts. The women's team is wildly successful, even if, you know, the Olympic performance was a bit underwhelming by their standards. The women's team is the defending World Cup champion. They're great in pretty much every year. The men's team is currently in World Cup timeout, you know, and you can point to that Gold Cup triumph all you want, but that's what really matters. So, some of the candidates, Hope Solo especially, I know Kyle Martino's talked about this too, have talked about that push for, you know, equal, maybe if pay is unrealistic, transparency, maybe, you know, equal treatment in terms of like the facilities and the fields that they use and the money spent and all that. And how big of a role do you think that factor is going to play, the treatment between the men's team and the women's team, given the gulf and how successful they actually are?
I think that we're all spoiled. I think that from the media to the very top to every part of our society, we just sort of take the women for granted, that they're just going to keep winning, and they are going to keep winning. And I was watching a bit of the I think it was the under-18 team. It was the under 20 team, the women's side. And there's just another raft of terrific players coming. It's going to keep going. It's almost on autopilot. That doesn't take away from the need to take it seriously. But I just don't think the urgency is there. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'm curious what you guys think, but I covered the Orlando game for you, Joey, yep. when they looked so good and looked like they were going to cruise into the World Cup. And then they fell on their faces. I think if they won the next game in such a convincing fashion, we would just keep going the way it is. I think that this sort of exposed a lot of problems, fissures in the foundation that people were ignoring. And if there's fissures in the women's foundation, people are ignoring those too because they're World Cup champions. And those players represent the nation so well. But that doesn't mean that the women are happy. They also feel like they've been ignored. And Kyle Martino, to his credit, has really talked a lot about equality and about getting better pay and changing the contracts. And I think that he's gotten this, that he's studied it. I can't imagine that it'll be all better no matter who wins, because the urgency is still on the men's side.
Well, I may get a little bit on the tangent here, but I'm kind of curious to just get your feedback, and Joey, you included on this as well. I think the U.S. is a very unique program in that the women actually, you know, generate as much interest and revenue as the men do, possibly even more. And like worldwide, that's not really a normal thing that's going on. And when these presidents are dealing with, essentially the job is to deal with FIFA, and the majority of the countries you're dealing with and the federation as a whole, they're not necessarily interested in the women's game as much as the U.S. itself is and should be. It's kind of a weird spot to be in. So, I'm just trying to think out loud and trying to figure out exactly what the right balance is. But is the ability of the men's team to grow and possibly reach that world stage level to where it is for the European countries, for example? Or is it one of those things where the women's team is just always going to be the kind of exception and the men's team's always going to be behind the rest of the world?
Well, I think I'll go first on that one. I think that the fact that the women's team, whether we like it or not, we could point to a number of factors here. The female athletes in this country were already fairly developed and had quite a few opportunities to play soccer in addition to other sports by the time the women's game really became something that FIFA was interested in the 80s and 90s. And so they were always going to have a little bit of a leg up on the U.S. men, so to speak, since the United States didn't really start taking men's soccer seriously for so many decades. But I also think that the Women's World Cup is fantastically popular. Outside of that, their biggest competition is probably the Olympics, and while that is certainly something that generates a lot of attention during the Summer Olympics every 4 years, it's also kind of roped into that bigger Olympic tournament. With the men, you've got like the World Cup, and there's plenty of viewership interest in the Gold Cup and the Confederations Cup, and these other tournaments that they can get into. And I just think that because I don't want to come off as sounding that women don't deserve equal pay, that they don't deserve the plaudits and the attention that the men get. But, I mean, I think the simple economics of it suggests that the men have more of this opportunity to be visible and make money. And, I mean, if you talk about a men's team that makes a deep run in the World Cup or pie in the sky wins a World Cup, we write, Adelson, we write a lot about Orlando as a budding soccer community where the U.S. wants to send its men's team for home games. They talk about Columbus and Sporting Kansas City's venue is kind of like the home stadiums because they know that that's where there's going to be a ton of support. They want to get to a point where that kind of support is pretty much everywhere. However, again, yesterday the U.S. women, beat the snot out of Denmark, the Euro runner-ups. You don't see the U.S. men scheduling friendlies with France and beating the snot out of them. It's just they're way more successful right now for a number of factors. But I do think that the priority – God, I might catch crap for this. I think it should be with the men, but I do think that there should be much more equal treatment.
But before we throw it to you, Adelson, I guess the question to pose to you, Eric, is more along the lines of, because this is kind of one of those FIFA issues or FIFA positions, so to speak, is the women's game and growing the women's game and getting that equality a major, major issue in this election that is going to be one of the deciding issues, do you think?
I don't think so. If you look at they talk about diversity. I think that they're earnest about it. I think they're earnest about diversity. I think they're earnest about the women's game. I really think that their hearts are in the right places. But if you look at the group of coaches I was in, sitting in that crowd, it was a couple hundred people there. There wasn't really much diversity. It was mostly middle-aged white guys like myself. There were some women. There was a lot of white. There was almost no minorities, really. And so I think that, and again, they don't really have to do much. And so I don't necessarily think, to your point, that it's wrong to put more emphasis on the men and improving the men. The men need to be improved.
Yeah.
But I do think that in terms of the pay issue, it is a big deal. Mm-hmm. Because you are going to have – that's not going to go away. The leadership that the women have showed is going to be passed down. I don't think you're going to get the next generation of women who just simply don't care about equal pay. I think they're going to be louder, more emboldened because of what's come before. And so whoever's in that job, it might not be the first on their agenda, but they better be prepared to deal with it because the women are going to be fearless about it. And it's a huge embarrassment if the women talk about going on strike or about some sort of collective decision to revolt. That makes headlines. That's something that we are going to be writing about. And you don't want that. I mean, remember, next year's a World Cup year. It's going to be in France. There's going to be a lot of international attention on it. There's going to be a lot of domestic attention on it. And, you know, the men are not going to play this summer. I think that the gap actually might increase in terms of interest. And the other thing to think about is this. If in our greater political society, you do have this blue wave where you have a different Congress and different representatives and different people in power, a lot of those new people are going to be women, and they are going to be very vociferous next year about the Women's World Cup team. They are going to want to jump on the bandwagon. If there are first-year reps and first-year senators in Congress, they are going to be waving the flag very aggressively for the Women's World Cup team. And that's something that, again, you do not want to look tone deaf during that summer if you're the new president, whoever you are. So I think that the most important urgent issue is the men's side, but there has to be a comfort and a support with the women's side that there right now is not.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. Now that I hear that from you, I think that the women's issue, the equality, the equal pay, and all that, it might not be the key issue, but if you do not, you know, I say head off at the pass, for lack of a better term, not that it's like not important, but if you don't address it right now, because it's out there more and more, and like you said, the women are speaking up more and more and feel empowered, as they should, to do so, then it's going to really look ugly down the line if you fail to properly address it right now, at least in some measure.
Yeah, no, I mean, look at just recently. I mean, they're the reigning World Cup champions. They have, I think that there's actually a lot of sports fans, especially after Julie Ertz last night, who can name Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, who can name several players on the women's team. Maybe not as many on the men's, but close. And then they're still playing in New Orleans on turf. You know, they can't even get a natural grass in their circuit, which is crazy. But the thing is that, again, if next year they go on and they win the World Cup again and they come back and they have to play on this awful turf that's dangerous for their health, it's not going to be quiet. They are going to be louder than ever, and the heat on a new leader is going to be really intense because part of this election is for that kind of change. They deserve it. They've earned it. And if whoever is in power doesn't do something as simple as giving them grass to play on, there's going to be hell to pay. And again, you're going to have and this is something that I sort of stumbled upon in 2015 is when I wrote about the tie between the artificial turf and the carcinogen story. I was able to maybe find one or two elected officials in Washington to talk about and comment on it. But there's going to be way more people that are invested in this next year, whoever wins these elections. It's going to be a lot easier to talk about it then. And then the pressure is going to come. It's one thing if the pressure comes from players. It's a lot different if the pressure comes from Washington. And that's something that anybody who's in power in soccer is going to have to be ready for.
I think we're about to wrap this up. So I guess final thoughts. Do you think someone in particular has the edge right now? Do you want to call your shot, or do you think right now it's still kind of, everything's just up in the air?
Well, to go back to your sort of political analogy here, it's a little bit how I felt. I think a lot of people felt during the Republican primary season, where it's like, okay, well, Trump is obviously the most popular and he's obviously doing the best, but are we going to get to the end and it's just some going to be fixed for Jeb Bush, or something's going to happen where the establishment's going to just put Rubio in there? And I think a lot of people expected that to happen, and it didn't. And then people woke up on election after the primary. Well, wait a minute, maybe this is for real. Maybe we missed it. And I think that you're in a similar situation here. I think that Kyle Martino is, to me, the best prepared man of the moment right now, because he is fresh, he's different, he's very well prepared, and he's a change. And he's sort of the best of all the worlds. He has sort of a very polished air about him from his TV background. He is a former player. He is saying a lot of the right things. He's quoting Steve Nash and Mia Hamm. He's a little bit self-deprecating. I think he'd be good talking to the media. He'd be good talking in a boardroom. I think he's definitely good talking to coaches. So to me, I think he is sort of the leader of the populist side. I also think that, you know, Caligiuri really came out of nowhere. I don't think he was taken seriously going into it. I think that he came out in a suit, and I know that that's sort of a superficial thing, but it showed his preparation, and he spoke very plainly but clearly, and he could tell he put thought into this. I think that he's sort of a dark horse candidate that I didn't see coming. And Solo, so the thing about Hope Solo is, I don't think that she's going to win for reasons that everybody understands, but I think that she is going to continue to put heat on leaders. And I think she'll continue to do that after the election. And I think that's healthy. I think that's a good thing. I think it's good that she's in this race because she says things that a lot of people are afraid to say. Ideally what happens, well, ideally that you have all the delegates and the voters have a chance to vote for who they really want. But even if it's, quote, rigged or fixed, or even if the establishment wins, hopefully there is some of a groundswell. The people have found their voices that they didn't have before. And the people in Chicago are truly more responsive to the complaints at the grassroots level, because that really is a problem in U.S. soccer. And they are not going to be an elite player in the world game if they don't start listening to the people in the working class communities more.
Well, thanks a lot for the time today, Eric. We appreciate you coming on. Joey, any final words from you?
No, hey, great stuff. Keep up the good work covering it for us. Hopefully, you know, we'll get a resolution to this next month that everybody can get behind.
Well, in the spirit of making terrible jokes, hopefully if Kyle Martino does win, maybe he'll hire Tata Martino. In any case, thanks again.
It hurts.
Yeah. Hey, at least I didn't do "Is Solo Our Only Hope" or "Why Not Da," but I guess I just did those. Thanks again, Eric, for coming on. And
Thank you.
Yeah, Joey, as always, it's been enlightening. We appreciate it. And hopefully we'll have you back on when this whole mess is sorted out and we actually have a winner.
All right, cool, guys. Thanks for having me on.
For Joey Gallino, for Eric Adelson, this is Shahan Ahmed, and this has been the FC Yahoo Podcast. Thanks for listening. And as always, please follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/FC Yahoo, and also on Twitter. That's @FC Yahoo. Thanks again. Bye.